We're weatherizing, sealing cracks, and getting ready for winter. It is time to ask the HVAC expert as part of our home improvement series on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So when we're experiencing a summer-like fall like this, I really find it hard to stay on task on the weekend and prepare for the fact that the cold air, the snow, the freezing temps, it will eventually arrive. Should we clean the gutters or do that long bike ride? The weather is gorgeous. Gutters, you lose. But there's that other lingering question. Is the furnace and fireplace ready to go when temps go into that eventual Wisconsin free fall? Bring your winterizing questions, 800-642-1234. Alex Steinberger is service manager for Midwest Heating and Cooling based in Maguanago, specializing in HVAC for homes and businesses. Alex, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, good morning. Let's first acknowledge that it feels strange to winterize and do these projects when we're having such a warm, balmy fall. What is the advantage to doing these projects when the weather is still warm?
Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like winter's coming, at least when you go outside today.
No.
But the advantage to doing it now is that you don't have to do it in the cold. So getting ahead of any problem is always great. So.
Yeah. You know, it's been so difficult to find contractors in the pandemic and get service people out. When you talk with other HVAC companies and you look at your own schedule, are you booked out for months? What's the situation like?
So a great thing about us and the industry is we try and talk about maintenance a lot. So maintenance definitely keeps us busy this time of year. Without it, to be fair, we would be pretty slow. But luckily, we're able to keep the books full and keep rolling.
So you find that, you know, if there is a maintenance job that people can't do, that they could probably still get it checked out before winter really sets in.
Oh, yeah. Now's the time definitely to get your furnace started up and your AC closed down for the winter.
Yeah, you just mentioned that word furnace, so we're going to go there first because it really is essential to keeping our houses cozy during the winter months. What should we do to inspect our furnace, make sure it's in working order?
The biggest thing is to turn the thermostat on and make sure that it runs. You'll probably smell a little smell coming out of there, obviously not running for 6 months or so. But you'll smell a little smell, and then you'll want to check the furnace filter. And then pretty much after that, any other questions or anything that you have, pretty much you go to an expert just because of safety and things like that. So.
What's that little smell we might be smelling in those first few moments that we turn the furnace back on?
To be fair, it's probably your filter. Your filter being dirty from the summer months and things like that, that's probably what you're going to smell. Your filter being colder will smell a certain way, and then heating it up, you're going to smell that little bit of dust and debris in there. So
when should we change our filters? What would you suggest?
Every filter is a little bit different, just like everybody's home. Depending on how many pets, children, things like that, it could be 1 month or it could be a year.
What are the different types of furnace filters that people can buy? What's out there on the market?
So you really want to look for, especially if you have heavy allergies, spring allergies, especially fall allergies that we're talking about right now. You're looking for more of like a bigger media filter, so a 4-inch filter, things like that, or an electronic air filter will really help get rid of most of those pollutants and allergies. So,
what is an electronic air filter?
That's a great question. It pretty much kills all of the extra pollutants and stuff that comes through, so it goes through a small screen. And anything big before that will pretty much get zapped by static electricity. So that way it doesn't go into the air.
Yeah, air filtration and circulation has been such a focus in the pandemic. And, you know, I'm looking at an air filter right now in the studio. What does that do? What should we do in terms of those air filters and making sure that they're in working order?
The biggest thing you can do is if have a maintenance guy, or if you feel comfortable enough to take that filter out and hold it up to a light. And the biggest thing is to make sure you can see through it. If you can't see through it, just better safe than sorry. It's better to breathe in clean air than dirty air. Just change it out. They're only a few bucks, so just get rid of it.
So. Yeah. So let's say you have an older home. The furnace is, has been kind of hobbling along for years. What should we consider if the furnace isn't working? When might be time to replace it?
That's a very fair question. We can fix a furnace pretty much forever. It really depends on the homeowner and where they're at and if they feel comfortable with it. We can keep a furnace going. I mean, obviously, parts and stuff can be a little hard to get of nowadays. So that's kind of a force of hand thing. But other than that, it's really, we can fix any furnace, any age, and keep them going.
So it's, but in terms, like if a customer says, hey, if I buy a new furnace here, what is the return on investment? Will my energy bills go down? Will I eventually be able to recoup this investment?
Of course, yes. Once you get past the 80% efficiency and you start looking at 90 plus efficient furnaces, you recoup your cost, I'd say, within a year or two. It's pretty quick, so it's pretty amazing.
Wow, that is very quick to recoup those costs because furnaces are very expensive. What do they run?
That's a great question. It really depends on what kind of system you're looking at. If you're looking at a high efficient, mid efficient, the price really can range. It kind of depends on how big the house is and what you guys are looking for, like what the customer wants.
I would imagine, too, that with a furnace, you have to also look at what is the duct work around that furnace and whether that can still apply to what you're putting in. Does that play into it?
Yeah, that is definitely a big factor on what we're doing. The older style furnaces are, they use some pretty big duct work. Mm-hmm. And the newer furnaces are a lot smaller, a lot compacter. Obviously, as things progress, we try and make things more efficient, so they tend to get smaller. So,
let's take a call now. Bill is joining us from River Falls. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I got a practical question about re-insulating the roof. we did our roof several years ago, and it was exactly like putting on another blanket. Instantly, you felt the improvement in the heating and the evenness of the house. But there was a portion of the roof, just because of the design that goes out over a dining room, that they couldn't access and couldn't insulate. And so my question is how would you re-insulate a portion of the roof that you can't access through you know, like your roof access or your ceiling access? Do they cut a hole in the ceiling and do it? Do they cut a hole in the roof and re-insulate it? I would like, it's a relatively small portion, but it definitely needs to be re-insulated because it gets very cold when we isolate it and shut the doors. So it definitely needs some insulation.
Yeah, you can feel that cold zone, I would imagine there, Bill, that you're experiencing. Alex, what would you suggest?
That's a great question. Winterizing your home that way, we don't have much experience with, unfortunately. But if I had to kind of take a stab at it, what I would say is I would have a company probably put a hole right there in the drywall above the dining room, and they could probably spray some insulation in that way. And drywall, obviously, is going to cost a little bit, but I think that would be the best course of action. But to be fair, I'm just kind of guessing at that because we don't do much of the insulating part of it.
Yeah, inject it right in there into the drywall up through there. Yep. We have heating and cooling expert Alex Steinberger. He's a service manager for a Wisconsin HVAC company as part of our Ask a Contractor series. Have you had an issue with pipes freezing over the years? Have you ever cleaned your ducts or hired a professional? What was that process like? Did you notice an air quality change in your home? What ways do you seal your home during colder months? 800-642-1234. Join in. We'll pick this up with Alex Steinberger in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing HVAC and how to winterize the home as part of our Ask a Contractor series here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. air leaks, they can waste a lot of energy, drive up our heating bill. Windows, a major source of air leakage. Other culprits are door openings, ceiling fixtures, vents, access panels. What questions do you have about weather stripping or winterizing pipes? How do you make your space comfortable and cozy in winter months? Join in 800-642-1234. Alex Steinberger is with a Wisconsin company that offers HVAC services for homes and businesses. And with us for the hour, let's talk about the air conditioner for a moment. Air conditioning units work hard in the summer, and then these units also live outside. How best do you turn off an air conditioner for the winter months?
You know, this is probably the one of the biggest questions we get this time of year. A big thing that people deal with is mice. Mice get inside that air conditioner, and it's kind of a problem. Obviously, come spring again, the biggest thing you can do is make sure that you turn off the breaker, and then we supply a cover to our maintenance plan customers. So we always put like a mesh cover over the top that way, and make sure that we turn off all the power to it so that way those wires aren't warm for those mice to get in and make a cozy home. So,
yeah, I know when we had our unit repaired and then eventually replaced, Freon is no longer something that on these really old units, Freon has been phased out. Is that right?
Yes and no. We still call it refrigerant Freon. Same thing. It's kind of like it's a different version of it.
Okay.
They're trying to make it more efficient and safe for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always changing. It's always a new coming thing. So that just kind of comes with the industry and the job. And so.
Yeah. Have you had customers who have had to replace their air conditioner because it is old and it is very inefficient and in using way too much of these refrigerants?
Unfortunately, yes. When you come across some systems, we weren't able to get specific refrigerants because of that reason. So yeah, when you have a leak or something happens, then yeah, unfortunately we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and there is only one option, and that is to replace them, but luckily they allow us to help them. So
have you had supply chain issues when getting these replacement parts or getting these chemicals that you put into these, air conditioners and other furnaces, so on?
I'd say the refrigerant would probably be the hardest thing that we had a hard time getting a hold of. Otherwise, we here at Midwest, we try to be different. So we try to order things in bulk a little bit beforehand because we kind of felt this change coming, obviously. So we are able to still provide all of our customers with everything they need because we have it all in the back of the shop. So
you've really tried to beef up your inventory in order to kind of stave off the fact that a lot of these parts are taking longer to get. Is that right?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, we've bought pretty much the vast majority of parts that break down in the winter and summer months on a furnace or air conditioner, and we sectioned off a part of the shop for that, just so that way we can continue to help people when other people aren't able to. So,
are these parts costing more since they're harder to get?
Yeah, they're obviously the shipments and things like that. They do cost a little bit more, but that's just. That just comes with it. If we want to be a service providing company, we have to have it on hand. So we just want to make sure we can help as many people as possible. So,
if you're just joining us, we're talking with HVAC expert Alex Steinberger. He's helping us winterize our home before cold temperatures set in. Works as a service manager with an HVAC company in Wisconsin. What questions do you have about winterizing your home or winter heating? What temp do you set your thermostat on during winter time? Do you have humidifiers going in your home? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We heard from Samantha, called from nap, couldn't stay with us. And Samantha wants to know about efficiency of heat pumps in Wisconsin. At a certain point, they drop in efficiency. And is it worth the investment considering how cold our winters are?
This is a great question. And here in Wisconsin, it does make sense to have a heat pump. It works down to specific temperatures, 10 degrees, 20 degrees, things like that. And then you do need some electric, but in that middle zone, like exactly like today and like the spring and fall months, it's a fantastic unit and the efficiency is perfect.
Can you explain, explain what a heat pump is and how it works?
Yeah. So it's It looks just like an air conditioner outside, but what it does is it has a valve in it, and it's pretty simple. All it does is it reverses it through the unit, and it makes that refrigerant that we were kind of talking about earlier either hot or cold, depending on what you want. So instead of needing a forced air furnace or something downstairs, your air conditioner sends heat and everything that way too. So.
Yeah, yeah. Have you had customers wanting to put those in or get those installed?
Yeah, yeah. We've done a few, and we fixed a few as well. We haven't really seen many big issues with them. It just kind of depends on where in Wisconsin you're looking. Obviously, when it gets colder faster, kind of up a little higher in the state, it doesn't really make sense. They kind of stick with the furnace and mm-hmm. the air conditioner that way. But the heat pumps are more kind of down by us, Madison, Maguanago, kind of things like that. So,
let's talk about how to set that thermostat, because we know that when we keep those temps lower during the winter in our home, that can really contribute to lowering our energy bill. How low can you reasonably set a thermostat in the winter?
You know, that really depends on the person. It's a mm-hmm. great question. The biggest thing is, obviously, you don't want your pipes to freeze. You don't want any of that. You don't want to come home and be like, wow, it's cold in here. But a big help to that is you can set it at 68, you can set it at 70, you can set it at 75, depending on where you feel comfortable. But a good way to help is actually a humidifier. A humidifier will actually help you feel warmer. If it's 68, it'll feel about 2 degrees warmer, so it'll feel like it's 70 in the house. So you can set your thermostat down lower and see that savings in energy that way and still feel warm.
Where should you place a humidifier in your home to do that?
We only recommend whole home humidifiers, which we actually put on the furnace because it's great to do one room in your living room or your bedrooms. That way you wake up and you feel better. But when we offer a solution that can do your whole house and make everybody feel great, it's a little bit cheaper for you that way. So you don't have to buy 5 or 6 of those portables. But we just want to help the whole house and everybody in it instead of just one section of it. So,
okay. And so that unit then attaches directly to your furnace.
Yep. To the ductwork right above the furnace. Yep.
To the ductwork. Yeah. Yeah. Let's take another call now. Alex is joining us from Fox Cities wanting to talk about furnace filters. Hi, Alex, go ahead.
Hi. So I've had professionals tell me that the higher MERV rating filters actually put a lot more stress on the motor and can wear it out sooner. And obviously the higher rating of the MERV, the more pollutants and all of that that it takes out of the air. But yet when I go to research that online and researched it using the actual furnace that I have, I'm not finding that. So I guess I'm wondering, what is the best MERV rating to be using that isn't going to be putting an extra stress on the motor because of having to try to pull air through a less porous surface is basically my understanding, is that the less porous it is, which is the higher MERV rating to get out more pollutants, then less air comes through it, and that puts on more stress and pressure on the motor.
Yeah, that's a tricky balance, and great question, Alex. Thank you. To the other Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a fantastic question. I'm assuming that Alex has a very efficient furnace, so that's fantastic to hear. As furnaces get smaller and more efficient, yes, you want to be careful on the air that you're restricting to it. MERV 7, MERV 8 filters, things like that, are pretty good for furnaces like that. With furnaces that have single-stage blower motors and kind of the less efficient side, you can do more for your indoor air quality. You can have bigger filters and restrict air because they're not as sensitive. Once you do start getting into that more efficient lifestyle and things like that, you don't want to restrict the airflow. You'll start overheating the furnace, things like that. You just want to install a good filter, so 7 or 8, kind of like I was saying, MERV, and then just check it pretty frequently. So you want to check it probably about every 3 to 6 months, and just make sure you're not restricting that air, because you also want to breathe in that clean air. But there is a healthy balance. So
yeah, and when you say to make sure you're not restricting that air, what do you mean by that?
So kind of like exactly what Alex is saying, so whoever's explaining to her is doing a fantastic job. If you have a very good filter, it has very small holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
So what it does is it only allows extremely small particles and things like that to come through, but it takes all the big stuff out. And what happens is those small holes inside that filter get plugged up pretty quick. because as you can imagine, if you don't get your ducts clean, things like that, the dust inside of that, inside of those ducts are going to be pretty heavy. So it's going to plug up those filters pretty quick, and it'll restrict it within a few months.
All right. So you should really keep checking those filters and make sure that they're in working order.
Yep.
Yeah. We're talking with Alex Steinberger, service manager for an HVAC business in Maguanago, tackling your questions about winterizing your space inside and out. What temp do you set your thermostat at during winter? Do you have humidifiers going in your home? How often do you replace your furnace filters? Do you have problems with your water heater? Join in. What's going on? Bring your questions on HVAC, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update with Alex Steinberger here on the Ideas Network. We're talking with the HVAC expert as part of our Ask a Contractor series on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting cost-effective tips for winterizing our spaces. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, we can easily save energy in the winter by setting our thermostat to 68 while we're awake and setting it lower while we're asleep or away from home. Do you have a programmable thermostat? How do you set it? What energy apps or tech have helped you bring down your energy bill in winter? What is on your winterizing to-do list this fall? Join in, 800-642-1234. We have HVAC expert Alex Steinberger tackling your questions for the hour. Let's go to Steve in Newbold, who's closing up his cabin. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi, Alex. So I've got a home up in the North Woods here, and I'm real concerned about mold and mildew. I do not have a heat source, so I'll be winterizing it. But I'm just wondering, do I just leave a window open, run an exhaust fan, or should I put a forced air unit in and just run the fan so I don't get mold and mildew?
No, this is fantastic. A forced air fan or an exhaust fan will work great. The biggest thing, it sounds like you're already going to do it, is making sure that all the water is shut off. You want to keep all that moisture out of there, kind of like what you're saying. So a kitchen, sometimes even like a kitchen exhaust fan, keeping that running. Opening a window could help, but you don't want to get the snow. You don't want to let that snow in there and then melt and things like that. So that I wouldn't recommend that. But an exhaust fan would probably be best, or a furnace. But winterizing it, turning off the water heater, draining that house down, getting rid of all that water inside of the house, that way you don't break pipes, is great. So,
Alex, is there any concern that if you have that exhaust fan running 24/7, that you could perhaps burn out that motor on that exhaust fan, or worse, you know, have it catch fire?
You know, this is a great question. The motors nowadays, for instance, the motor inside my house, and I have a motor in the attic that I leave 24/7, 365. It never shuts off winter or summer. So the biggest thing is maintenance. As long as you look at that thing before you leave and make sure that there's no oil on the motor, make sure that the electricity is good to it, amp draw, make sure you maintain that motor, it should be good to go. There's always that worry when you leave that you don't really have control of it. But as long as you maintain it, yeah, I think you should be good.
Steve, how does that sound to you?
That sounds pretty good. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. You know, you were talking about pipes freezing, Alex, and I was wondering, you know, pipes can typically freeze at 20 degrees, but burst pipes can easily, you know, cost thousands of dollars. How can we avoid this from happening?
Make sure your furnace stays running is the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. Make sure you have some kind of heat source in there. If you don't have a heat source, kind of like Steve was saying, if you don't have a heat source and you plan on leaving a cabin or a camper or something like that up north, or in, obviously being cold in Wisconsin, you want to make sure you winterize that thing. Either put antifreeze in the toilets, drain that thing down, make sure that there's no water in the pipes anywhere, is the biggest thing if you know you're leaving. If you're going to be home or you're going to have a cabin up north that you're going to kind of come back and forth from, I really recommend a Wi-Fi thermostat to make sure that heat stays running and you don't have any burst pipes. So,
yeah, and when you say put antifreeze in the toilet, can you explain that a little bit?
So So sometimes what happens is when you drain the water from the house, is there's still going to be a little bit of water in the toilet, in the back of it, and there's a little trap there. So what you want to do is you want to put some antifreeze in there, so that way the little bit of water that's in that trap doesn't get frozen and crack your toilet and leak water, and it won't be a big deal until you come back to fill the toilet up, and then you're going to notice, oh no, the porcelain's cracked or something like that.
So. Mm. So if pipes do freeze, what is the best way to fix this problem?
The best thing to do is to make sure that you call somebody out and shut the water off to the house. Because if you don't shut the water off to the house, it's just going to continue to leak and leak and leak. And the more water in the house, obviously the more issues and the more problems. So as soon as you notice it, we have, like, for instance, we have water sensors and stuff that a lot of our customers buy. We put them near the water heater or near the furnace or the air conditioner, things like that, that if it leaks, it sends a message to their phone and says, hey, you have water leaking. And somebody can run up there, turn off the water, and make sure that you stop it right away. So the biggest thing is turn off the water. So
yeah. I imagine you've seen just like an explosion of apps and technology that homeowners can use now to sense and to set their thermostats and things like that.
Yeah, it really is. That is one of the great things about technology. It's amazing what we can see. We can load up a computer and we can see 100 customers. And they just allow us to take a look at what they have. And if they ever leave their home for a weekend, it'll send us an email saying, hey, we're going to be gone for this weekend. If it gets below 50 degrees, don't call us. Don't do anything. Just go check it out. Please don't let our house freeze, things like that. So we really try and take care of our customers that way. And they get the same email, so they know if their furnace stops working. So.
Well, Lisa sent us an email, and they're wondering how low to set the temperature in the winter when they're gone from their house for, say, 1 or 2 weeks. What would you suggest?
I say the lowest you want to go is probably around 50 to 55. Okay. You want to stay somewhere in there because it's still going to be cold. But like you said, those pipes will start to get freezing around 30, 32 degrees. 20 degrees is kind of dangerous, so you want to start being careful around that area.
Yeah. So keeping it around 50, 55 might keep things just north of any type of pipes being frozen. Let's go to Tom in Peshtigo. Tom, hi. What's on your mind?
Hi. I got a couple of questions. First one's about furnace filters. There's a little arrow on the filter. Is that supposed to point away from the furnace or towards the furnace?
That's always supposed to point towards the furnace. So you always want to go with the airflow, Tom.
Yep. Okay. My next question is ceiling fans, are they much help? And should the switch be up or down in the winter?
I guess I want to understand your question a little bit better, Tom. Ceiling fans, do you have a furnace or a air handler in the attic? And is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about like actual circulating ceiling fans?
Circulating ceiling fans.
Okay. Yeah, so I would definitely recommend running them. Kind of like I was talking about earlier, any movement of air, like in my home, I leave my fan running constantly because I want my bedroom to feel the same as my living room or the same as the downstairs rec room. If you can keep that airflow moving, Tom, you'll feel much more comfortable, whether it's with a ceiling fan or a blower motor or anything like that. So.
And for winter, summer, should you there's a little switch on top. Should you switch that up or down?
If I'm understanding that correctly, yes. Yep, it'll change it, so it'll either pull the air or it'll push the air. Either one is okay. It's just whatever you feel comfortable with.
Whether you want to push it up toward the ceiling or pull it down, you can have that option. Tom, thank you for the question. You know, as we're talking there about waters, what should we do to our sprinkler system once it gets cold out?
Well, that's a good one. A lot of people forget to do this, including myself, last year. So you want to make sure that when you're turning off your outside water spigots and things like that, you want to make sure that you're opening them up to make sure that there's no water coming out of it. So even if you turn off that valve to the outside spigot and things like that, you really want to make sure that you open it up outside to let any existing water that's in there out. Otherwise, that water will freeze, and you definitely don't want that. So.
Yeah. And in terms of hoses and things like that, you just would recommend disconnecting the hose and winding it up, getting it out of there?
Yeah, unless you have a cover for it and something like that. Like my house, what we do is we don't want the hose getting rusted or too cold and cracks and things like that. So we always wind it up, put it in the carrier, put it in the garage, put it in the attic up there, and then bring it out for next spring. You don't want a hose that's going to expand and contract too much in the cold. It'll crack, and you'll be buying a new hose about every 2 years. So,
how do we locate our water shutoff valve and what to do there?
That's a little bit of a tougher question. Every house is different, depending on who built it, where it is. The biggest thing you want to do is kind of locate where the spigot is on the outside. And then you kind of, from that spot, you want to go into the basement on that side of the house and look for a copper pipe or an insulated pipe that goes outside. And you'll kind of see a shutoff. It'll be a red, blue, sometimes even a yellow handle. And you want to turn that against the pipe.
Okay.
So you want to turn that to shut that off. So,
if you're just joining us, we're talking with Alex Steinberger, who's a heating and cooling service manager in Wisconsin, as we get tips on winterizing homes ahead of the season and what we can do now to save on the heating bill this winter. Taking your questions, have you ever cleaned your ducts, or do you cover your air conditioner when colder temperatures hit? Have you dealt with frozen pipes before? What did you do? What do you do around the cracks on windows and sealing windows up? 800-642-1234. Ken is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Ken. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My question, we have a cabin up north, and we leave the heat on over the winter. We have heat tapes, and we have electric baseboards. And I wanted to put in like an internet-controlled thermostat, like a Nest or something. And a friend of mine told me that they don't work with electric baseboards. Do you know, can you use those with baseboards?
This is a great question, Ken. It depends on what voltage your baseboard is. So, yes, I've had Nests that can do electric heat, but you have to be careful on the voltage that you buy. So you're either going to have a baseboard that's 208, 230 volt or 115, 120 volt, something like that. And you just want to make sure you buy the right thermostat for that.
Okay.
Yeah, Ken, do you know what you have in your baseboards?
I don't, but I'm sure I can try and figure it out. I just have a regular service. I don't think it's, 220 or anything, so I imagine it's just a regular circuit.
It'll say, just to kind of lend you a hand there, it'll say on one of the sides, there'll be a panel you can lift up. It'll say there what it is, and then if it's 120, you can get a Wi-Fi thermostat that does 120 for sure, so.
Okay, thanks for the help.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. Yeah, and Alex, when you mentioned Nest, that is one of the Wi-Fi technologies to be able to control your thermostat. What does that do, and how does that work?
So all it really does is it's pushing people to feel more comfortable not being home. So let's say that you go to Florida. Let's say that you go to a family member's house and you're worried about your house and things like that. It can send you alerts when it gets too cold or too warm in your house in the winter and summer months. Or if you're like, hey, I'm on my way home, I'm getting off the plane to come home, you can adjust that thermostat and say, hey, I'll be home in 20 minutes. I'd like it to be a little bit warmer, a little bit cooler. It's just kind of a perk that way. So.
We're talking with HVAC expert Alex Steinberger, helping us winterize our spaces, be ready to go when the weather turns. Still time to talk about the winterizing questions that are on your mind. Furnace, water heater, attic insulation. What project are you trying to do before the snow flies? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Alex Steinberger here on the Ideas Network. We're focused on HVAC systems and winterizing the home as part of our Ask a Contractor series on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. Energy Department says heating the home uses more energy and costs more money than any other system in a home, typically making up about 29% of our utility bill. Do you dread the soaring costs of heating and cooling your home? What have you tried? Do you have cold zones or cold spots in your home that refuse to warm up no matter how high you crank the thermostat? Still time for your question. 800-642-1234. Our heating and cooling expert is Alex Steinberger. Works as a service manager with a Wisconsin company, and he's with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Aaron now in Neenah. Hi, Aaron. What would you like to add?
That I actually just bought a house and moved in and tried to install the Nest, and it's giving me a no power to RH wire error, and I'm noticing that with either the Nest or other thermostats I've tried, including the one that's there, unless it's battery operated, it's not getting any power. I've tried checking the RH wire with a multimeter, and it's running 24 volts straight through, so it seems like it should be powering it, but I have no idea what's going on and why I can't put any thermostat on there unless it's battery powered and doesn't work.
No power to RH wire. Alex, have you come across this?
Oh, yeah, we come across this, I'd probably say, weekly. Down by us, the biggest issue, Aaron, is how many wires do you have to that thermostat?
I have five. I have the heater and then an air conditioner, and I had a tech in, actually, and he said everything looks like it's wired right, but no thermostat that I put on there works right.
The biggest thing that we deal with is sometimes you have to use a wire saver. I would recommend having a company come out and take a look at it, but it sounds like you're missing, it's called a C-wire. It sounds like you need a C-wire coming from your furnace to your thermostat. Even if you have it upstairs, it doesn't mean it's not broken. It doesn't mean it's not broken in between or something like that. I would probably recommend replacing that wire if you're having an issue with every thermostat that you're trying to install.
Aaron, have you looked into that?
Yes, ma'am. We did run new wires, actually, from the board to the thermostat, a brand new wire, and it's still giving me the same issue.
Okay. Well, then I would definitely say look into the control board. I would have a company come out, look into that control board. Just because you're receiving that voltage doesn't mean it's the right thing for that thermostat or enough for that thermostat. A big thing could be, too, is making sure that thermostat's charged before you put it on the wall and things like that. So.
Aaron, thank you, and good luck with that. Yeah, Maureen now in Port Washington. Maureen, hi.
Hi. I have a question regarding a home with a three-zone furnaces. We have three. I'm wondering about replacement of furnaces and air conditioners. When do you do that? They're 20 years old. They have been serviced. They're still working. They are that old, and I'm just wondering if I should progressively replace or just wait till they're dysfunctional, and when to do that, winter or summer, or what's the best time?
I love to hear that they lasted 20 years old. That's fantastic. Typically, what we see out of furnaces and things like that and air conditioners are about 10 to 15 years. So to hear that you're around 20 is absolutely fantastic. So great job doing the maintenance and everything that way. Looking into replacements, a good time of year would be spring or fall when you don't need them. You're kind of in the lull time of, hey, we can run the fan, we can open the windows a little bit. That would be the time where some jobs are a little bit more complicated, where if the contractor runs into problems, now's the time where it's not a big urgent time. There's no snow on the ground. There's no sun blaring heat at you. So.
Yeah, and those in-between seasons. So would you suggest that Maureen do a phased-in replacement or, you know, replace those three-zone furnaces in one fell swoop?
You would probably get – so I would – it depends on Maureen's budget, depending on where she's at and what she'd like. Mm. If she's saved up some money and she wants to do that right away, you would probably get a better – to be fair, a better deal with that company. If you did all three at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're progressive, like, hey, these two are still working, this one's caused me trouble, let's do that. It's always better to be proactive instead of reactive. It just kind of depends on where you're at and where you feel comfortable.
That wouldn't mess up any compatibility issues with the other two older furnaces operating versus the new one?
So kind of what she was explaining is she has three separate.
Okay.
So I'm assuming they do three separate sides of the house.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I don't see that causing any issues at all. If they were connected into the same ductwork and things like that, then I could say, yeah, they could possibly do that. But without knowing, I would say it'd be okay.
Maureen, thank you for the call.
We heard from
Chris called in, couldn't stay with us. Chris says that they bought a 100-year-old home 4 years ago. And the house, it came with a fuel oil furnace. What are the pros and cons of oil gas? Should they switch to a newer furnace? What would you suggest?
So oil gas is great. We're probably one of the last companies around that still deal with that, actually. People say it feels a lot hotter when that oil furnace is running. The only issue is, of course, with oil is the cost of it. It really does cost a pretty penny to run that. If you have natural gas at the road or close to the house, I do recommend changing it once that oil furnace starts to have problems, just because it will be easier on your wallet and better for efficiencies and things like that.
How often do you have to refill those oil gas, you know, furnaces? How often do they require that?
It depends on how cold it is.
No, sure.
Outside. And then also it depends on what the customer has the thermostat set to. My dad used to have one, and he was changing it about every two to three weeks. He liked it pretty cold in his house. But obviously when it's negative 10 and that furnace is pumping, you'll definitely have to do that more frequently. So.
Well, along the lines of these older, century-old homes that may not have an HVAC or an air conditioning unit, is it worth the investment to add a whole air conditioning system, or would you suggest window units? Are those okay as far as efficiency?
Window units are still okay as far as efficiency, yes. But I think that it's definitely become more of a necessity nowadays to be able to cool the whole house instead of just one room. What we do offer quite a bit to people instead of window units is mini split systems, and you can control each individual room and whatever temperature you'd like.
And they're called mini split systems, you said?
Yep.
Yeah, and that way you can really zone your home, your space to where what you're going to be using at what time.
Yeah, so a zoning system can do like certain sections of the house, kind of like you're cutting it like a pie. And what a mini split system does is you can have one in your room, I can have one in my room, we can have one in the kitchen, the living room, and we can set those to all different temperatures depending on if we're going to have guests over, if I sleep colder, if you sleep warmer, things like that. So it's really individual comfort is what mini splits are instead of zoning. So it is it's a great thing to have.
Yeah, and so for that family member who's blazing hot when everyone else is freezing, that mini split system might come in and help.
Yes, definitely, 100%.
Because no one can get the temperature right. Believe you me, no one has it right.
That is totally correct. I recently just got married last year, and I'm feeling that as we speak.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Alex Steinberger is service manager of Midwest Heating and Cooling, offering HVAC services for homes and businesses based in Maguanago. Make sure you're back with us next week, a week from today, for more expert advice from our Ask a Contractor series. We dive into home inspections. Oh my goodness, home inspections and what that process looks like. Also, don't miss out on any helpful advice from our home improvement series. Find past episodes at wpr.org/contractor. You'll find a list of resources we've learned about over the weeks to help on your next home improvement project. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.